You're listening to the AMS Excellence Podcast. This podcast is dedicated to the discussion of strategic best practices related to associational missions. Here's your host, Rick Curtis.
Hey guys, it's another day on the AMS Excellence Podcast, and I'm excited about our guest. Our guest is Mike Carlisle, and we're going to be talking about associational regionalization. But before we get to our guest, let me say something to our smaller associations. Today's conversation is in the context of a large association, but I want to challenge you if you're a smaller association. The fact is that many of these large-scale principles can help you think through smaller geographies or even small numbers of churches in big geographies. So don't jump out of the podcast just yet. Hang on, because we've got something for you here today as well. So now, to our guest. Mike Carlisle is the Director of Missions of the San Diego Southern Baptist Association. Mike, thanks for coming in today. I appreciate it.
That's a pleasure, Rick. Good that we're neighbors.
Yeah, it's good. It's funny. We're laughing because I said good to come in today, and I'm sitting in his living room in beautiful San Diego. So, Mike, you have a real diverse background, multiple degrees, all kinds of things that have brought you here. First, tell us about your family, and then bring us through your journey and what led to ministry in your current position.
Great. Okay. Well, as you know, I started out like you did in business, and I was in the cable television business. But Judy and I actually met together in a little Baptist college back in Kentucky.
Nice.
Where we met, and we're married eventually, and started moving around the country, building cable systems, and having a great time. And along the way, we had three sons. We ended up moving in Texas, and Nebraska, and then eventually in California, which brought us out here on the West Coast. We had three sons. They all were married. We have five granddaughters.
Wonderful.
And one grandson, all above average and beautiful.
Yeah, of course. And process, what brought you to your current position?
Well, actually, when we were in college, you and I both felt called to missions. And we made a commitment to do that. But being struggling young students, I had to drop out while she finished school. She's a teacher, science teacher. Mm. And so then I got involved in business and kind of set the ministry call aside.
Okay.
And thought, well, maybe God could use me as a business guy. So in moving around the country, it was in Sacramento that I actually had an experience that just kind of blew my socks off. Hmm. One day I was in Los Angeles and I'd sold the largest contract of cable components to a company called, well, I won't even name the name, but they were just a big cable company. They also a home builder, and had a picture taken on the trade magazine. I remember driving home thinking, Judy's going to love this commission, man. She's going to love it. And on the way home, I got this sense of conviction so strong that night in bed, we lived in Sacramento, and I just broke down and began to weep. Hmm. And I thought, what is going on? And God showed me that I had really forgotten everything he had intended for me to do. And so that's the journey that brought us back into full-time ministry.
Wow, that's a wonderful story. Hey, guys, so the reason I'm sitting down with Mike today is that he is doing something spectacularly well, and that is looking at the regionalization of his association. And like I said in the intro, stick around if you're a smaller association because there are some nuggets here for you as well. But, Mike, you've undergone this complete restructuring process in the association, and it's based around six associational areas?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Tell us about that. How's that going?
Well, it had a lot to do with COVID in the sense that it shut everything down for a couple of years. And so during that time, we began to think, we've been doing this for 80 years in San Diego.
Wow.
You know, three churches back in the 40s got together and said, let's form an association, which, as you know, and all our listeners know, association is the backbone of everything structurally for Southern Baptists.
Yes, sir.
It's the oldest form of organization back in Pennsylvania 300 years ago, 1707. Mm-hmm. The first association was formed. And so I began to think and doing a lot of reading because we didn't have much going on. Just doing a lot of reading. And,
yeah.
And I realized that the very churches that created the association are gone.
Wow.
All the leaders are gone. Some of the churches may still be here, but they're completely different. The churches that were the up-and-coming churches back then now are struggling just to make it. And I thought, what if we were recreated by the existing 200 churches that are here?
Mm-hmm.
Would it be any different? And then I began to look at statistics. And I thought, you know, for the past 20 years of life, we did a study and said, we baptized 7.1 million people, Southern Baptist. And yet we're running 20,000 people less in worship now. This is pre-COVID.
Mm.
Now than we were after baptizing 741 people. So it occurred to me, if we keep doing what we're doing, we're going to keep getting what we got. Mm-hmm. And it's not a pretty picture.
So before it even birthed really as a regionalization plan, it just, it birthed as a plan like, hey, times are changing. Mm. Something needs to be done to stay relevant and contextual, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, nothing bad was really going on, but I got some of our thinkers together and I said, guys, if we were to restart the association again, when we come back together, what are your ideas? And a lot of them had some great ideas. So I believe that all of us are smarter than any one of us.
Amen.
And I needed help. So we've often talked about, could we break this county up? San Diego has 18 cities in the county. It's 4,200 square miles, and that's a big area.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have a big event like we do each month in South San Diego, we lose the people from the north.
Right.
I mean, the traffic is terrible.
Yeah.
If we have it in the north, we lose the people from the south. So that means your average leader probably goes to one gathering maybe every 3 months. And we had some great gatherings. We'd have anywhere from 60 to 100 people come at any one monthly luncheon. And we did a lot of teaching and training and brought in great speakers. And then it occurred to me, what has that produced? And I won't name the names, but we had some really top-notch leaders share with their church leaders. And they all walked away saying, man, that was great. We love it. We'll be back next month. But I didn't see much come of that. I mean, they went back to the churches. They had to do the weddings, the marriages. They had, you know, the funerals. They had the day-to-day sermon preparation.
Right.
And all that great stuff they just learned in the meeting kind of thought, well, it went into a parking lot.
So, yeah.
So I thought, could we do anything different? So the regionalization came up. What if we broke up in the north and south? So that was where we started.
Okay.
Well, that's a good idea. Maybe. But that means twice as much work for me.
Right.
And then we got to thinking about, wait a minute, there's regions here that are really diverse. South San Diego, close to the border of Mexico and close to the port area, is completely different than the north side where you and I live.
Yeah.
And so we begin to think about, what if the churches in each region who had two things in common? One, the pastors were called to the same location.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, they were called to make a difference in that region. But the fact is, they weren't working together. You know, they didn't really even know each other. So how could we build a trusted relationship, have them pray for one another? So we began to look at six regions.
Okay.
And that's how it ended up coming together.
So you mentioned that COVID played a role in that. And I imagine, you know, the whole world changed at COVID. So they were going into video conferencing and all these other things. So in some sense, it brought people together that weren't really getting together on a regular basis anyway. So I'm sure that played into it as well. But as you talk about breaking San Diego into six regions around similar geography, this is where I think the tie-in happens with some of our smaller associations.
Mm.
Because before I get to my next question, I want to ask you a side question. As each of those regions meet, are you finding that the relationships are growing deeper because they're intentionally gathering together in a smaller geography?
The answer is yes and maybe.
Okay.
Because whenever you try something new, you know, there's that bell-shaped curve where you get the innovators,
the early adopters,
and that comes out to about 13%, which means you start with a pretty small group. But if you get 13%, that's a tipping point.
Mm.
And that way, the later adopters say, oh, look at that, that's working. We had two goals, Rick. Goal number one was for the group itself. How do we know each other?
Yeah.
How do we pray for each other? How do we coach, peer-to-peer, coach each other, solve problems together? That was the first one. And the second is, we live in the same region. You know, if God looked down on our region, I think he cares about our individual churches. But when Jesus entered the city, he wept.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see us weeping over our region together and caring about, is the region any more Christian now than it was 10 years ago? And the answer is no.
Right.
So something needed to change.
Yeah.
So that's kind of post-pandemic. We felt like at some point we need to have a meeting and express this idea, this vision. So that was the next step for
us. So you're really not that far into this vision implementation. How long would you say it's been implemented?
No, it's not even a year yet.
Not even a year yet. No. And the initial successes are obvious. I attended one of the groups. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I told you that, but I have attended the North County meeting, and it was a great time of fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
Where's it going from there?
Okay, so we gathered people together June of last year, 2021, and we challenged them with the vision, and then we broke into six regions, and I had a leader for each region, and I said, let's do two things. Number one, let's ask the question, where do you see God at work in your region? So here, our smallest number of churches in the region was 22.
Okay.
Our largest number of churches was over 50 in a region. So here were pastors, leaders from those regions, and they knew where they could see God at work. So they began to share actively. And then we said, number two, what are the greatest needs, but what's it going to take to really reach that region? In other words, what are the needs and how are we going to work together?
So if I'm hearing you right, each region then would have some level of autonomy in terms of their community engagement to reach their community, right? So if I could simplify, maybe, so if region one or North County region wanted to reach out through the schools and they found that they all had that similar vision, but region three wanted to do something completely different, it's all under the banner of the association. That's doable, right?
Absolutely doable. Yeah. So what are the greatest needs? And where's God at work? And then I said, let's pray. And they took it serious. I mean, they literally got on their face. We had people laying on a carpet praying and weeping. I mean, it was just that moment. We come back together. It's been 2 years. It just felt powerful.
That's great.
So that's how it launched.
Wow. Well, so in every new endeavor and even things that are amazing and God glorifying and have great traction, there's pros and cons in it all. So let's discuss that. I mean, what are some of the pros and cons that you've found with this regional structure?
Well, it's funny you ask that because we just had our Southern Baptist Conference of Associational Leaders here.
I was there.
In Anaheim. And Ray Gentry asked me, he said, would you talk about this to some of our associations, and he said, particularly the pros and cons. So I'm ready for this question.
Well, that's great because since you're so ready, let me put my shameless plug in. I spoke at that conference, and if you weren't there and didn't hear that, you could listen to last month's podcast because it's there. So, all right, go ahead. Sorry for the shameless plug.
Nah, no worries. So, okay, let me give you the pro and a con.
All right.
There's nine of them. And I'll go one at a time and you can ask any questions you want. So
all right.
The first one is, what's the pro of dividing into regions? The first pro is you have pastors who now become a council for changes in that region. For example, if you're going to plant a new church in region one, North County West, we've done that in the past and we didn't really confer with the pastors there. You know, partnership with the church, partnership with NAM. We come in. Boom, we'd start a church. And in one case, had a pastor call me and he said, hey, what's up with you guys? I said, what do you mean? He said, you know, you planted a church 1 mile from my church. It would have been a good idea if you'd have talked to me.
Right.
I could have given you some thoughts. That's a little close, in my opinion, for you to plant a church. So I thought, good point.
Yeah.
So a pro is you can then go to that region where the pastor would meet and say, hey, where do the next churches have to be planted?
Right.
They can tell us that.
Yeah.
The con of that is planting without collaboration is not a good idea.
Right.
So that's the first.
Well, but if you do it right, you have that collaboration, right? And what I like about what you just illustrated, and I think even our smaller associations can glean from that, I think a lot of times the AMS or the DOM isn't really asking the church leaders or the pastors, what are those key points of ministry that are available in the geography? And they'll just move because they think it's best for their association to do something without that consultation.
Yeah.
And what you're doing by empowering these local guys on their team and within their region is saying, hey, this ministry is going to be birthed. And I know you and I feel the same way about this. Top-down leadership is not ideal. Mm-hmm. Ground-based leadership, decision makers on the field is where it comes. So when you've got these guys together in their region, they can determine what their region's going to do to best impact for the gospel. That's golden to me. Yeah. I don't even see a con there, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, the con is if you don't do it.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
The con.
Yeah.
So the second one is, I call it the Nehemiah strategy. You know the story. Mm-hmm. Nehemiah went back to rebuild the walls around Jerusalem when he was taken captive to Persia. And given the task, he did it in 52 days. It was miraculous because he actually called out the priest and said, I want you to rebuild the wall in the area where your house is.
Yeah.
So in other words, you're protecting your family and your neighbors. And I thought, man, that's a great strategy for our regions. So these pastors should own that region. We're a military county, as you know.
Yeah.
If we had 20 to 50 military outposts in any one of these regions, we'd own the region.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we'd own the region.
Yeah.
So why don't we do that with churches? Why aren't we making a difference? We did a little study in San Diego, and, you know, after 80 years being here, we got about 6 to 8% penetration of the county. And who could be happy with that? 80 years.
Yeah.
You know, Southern Baptists have 300 years of history in associations. And if you look at the penetration we have nationally, you say, who could be happy with that? So I think we need to try something different. So the Nehemiah strategy is critical. And the con, you've already mentioned that, is top-down strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Top-down strategy usually needs to be revived every 3 or 4 years because it runs out of fuel, it runs out of steam, mm-hmm. and it runs out of enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. So you got to come up with something different. The only sustainable strategy that has long-term sustainability is when it's owned locally.
That's right. You're absolutely right.
So you already know that. Now, 3, I call the pro here peer-to-peer coaching. And I found out that in most groups, you don't really need to bring in an expert. There's enough expertise within a group of pastors if you ask the right question.
Yeah.
And so peer-to-peer coaching can be intimidating because some do want to share their failures or their hurts. But when you have trust and you really have a praying group of pastors together in one region, and you say, hey, who's got the biggest issue today at our meeting? And then you say, okay, share your issue, and let's all pray for you, and let's all share our experiences. And it's working great.
Go ahead with the con, and then I'm going to hit you up with the thought. So
no peer-to-peer support.
No peer-to-peer support. That's
a con.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's devastating. So Glenn Davis out in Hardo, Kansas, Baptist Association. I just interviewed him 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
for the podcast, and what he does, it ties into this peer-to-peer thing that you just mentioned and some words that you used, because they're very strategic and do a one-day preaching seminar to help guys up their game in preaching. But here's what's key to that. That sounds really weird to some of us when we first hear that, like, who would go, you know, or whatever. But as you hear Glenn articulate it, it's amazing how he has set a culture where, look, we're not trying to make you like this preacher, or you're not in a cohort and you're somehow trying to be like the best preacher in that room. You can come at any level, at any way, and just leave a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what peer does. Peer-to-peer coaching and peer-to-peer training, it doesn't necessarily make you some level. It doesn't necessarily make you like some person. It doesn't necessarily enhance you in specific ways. It just makes you better.
Yeah.
And even if that's 1% better, that's the beauty of the peer-to-peer thing.
Yeah.
Me.
In fact, one of our pastors is the infamous Dr. David Jeremiah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you want a great preaching example?
Yeah.
So I called him one day. I said, hey, we're having the associational monthly meeting in your church Sunday. Would you be available to tell us how you prepare a sermon?
Yeah.
Oh, he said, I'd love to.
Yeah, that's great.
So he brought a manuscript, and he gave all of us a copy, and he said, here's what I did. And he went through point by point by point mm-hmm. and told us how he put it together. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And the guys walked away saying, that was worth the zero money that we paid to come to this.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's the thing, right? Because we all know the folly. We saw it through pastors not wearing socks and wearing Hawaiian shirts 20
yep.
years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
We all know the folly of trying to be somebody that God hasn't called you to be.
Right.
And whenever you put together a peer-to-peer environment, you're always honing in on, okay, what has God called me to be? And how do these brothers see and affirm my gifts and calling and my strengths as I can learn from them and they can learn from me? It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So peer-to-peer coaching, the 4th one, and we'll go a little faster here.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm interjecting too
no,
much.
No, that's good. That's good. I love it. The 4th one is the pro is churches now collaborate.
Yeah.
The con is they compete.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And we've all been there. I come out of a business world like you, and when I became a pastor, I thought, I get it. I want more people than the church next door to me.
Mm-hmm.
I was using my business training to get market share from my church, so how can I differentiate my church to be different, to attract more people? Rather than asking the right question, what's God's purpose for this region? And the two things that happened in the churches that I've pastored, number one, they always had more people than when I left than when we had there, and the community was worse off. So discouraging.
Yeah, for sure.
So churches collaborate or they compete. Number five, churches take ownership of the region. Pastors is a tough job. And those of us who have been pastors realize that there's more things to do than there is time to do them. Mm-hmm. So taking ownership of the region is extra work.
Yeah.
And if we don't do it, we work independently, which means we put the bushel basket over our lampstands and we don't do as much together as we could do. So that's another one. Here's number six. I call it a commitment to loving your neighbor, because if there's one thing churches ought to do is reach their physical, literal neighbors. Mm-hmm. So without some strategies to love your neighbor, there's no intentional outreach to our literal neighbors. Mm-hmm. And the next one's kind of like it. Number seven is a tool called Bless Every Home. It's an app, free, download it, put your address in, and it shows you a map on your phone or mobile device of where your home is, and it shows you every home location around your house. You click on that home, and it tells you the name of the people that live there.
It's amazing.
So you say, I'm going to commit to praying, and they hold you accountable. Mm-hmm. They send you, you decide, how often do I want to be reminded to pray for my neighbors? So once a week, once a day, and they'll send you a little reminder, pray for your neighbors today. And you click, I prayed for my neighbors, and they keep track of that. So now you have some accountability to actually pray for your neighbors. And so the con of that is there is no accountability. Yeah. And that's where most of us have been. We preach it and we teach it, but actually doing it is another thing.
So for large and small association alike, that single resource can be transformational.
Amen.
So remind us of what that resource is again.
It's called Bless Every Home. If you go to your resource and just type in Bless Every Home, your app center, mm-hmm. it'll pop up, download the app, and you're off and running.
And it's a free app.
Free app.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Number eight is what I call a commitment to develop regional leaders. It's kind of like your family. It's easier to do projects in your garage as a dad rather than train your children to do them. Mm. But at the end of the day, if you don't train your kids, they grow up with a deficit in their
right.
training.
Yeah.
It takes more time to develop leaders and encourage them and resource them. And so if I've got six, by the way, I have two leaders in each region.
Okay.
So we have a backup too. And the reason we always get an associate to every leadership role is for training purposes.
Right.
So I've got not six leaders, but I've got 12 leaders. And the goal here is for them to own it, not me.
Right.
And I'm here to do the heavy lifting. We send out registration links. We send out emails to all the churches in their region to invite them to their events. And then we send them a spreadsheet. Say, here's the people who are coming, because we also provide budget for them to pay for the lunch. It's a free lunch when they come to it as well.
What I love about that is a local movement, but it's supported and empowered by the association.
Yeah, right. So without that, there really is no intentional regional leadership development. And I think real leadership development has to be hands-on. You know, it's like my brother was a pilot. He was not only a pilot, but he was an instructor. He was multi-engine rated, night rated. He even taught paraplegics how to fly.
Hmm.
I asked him one day, I said, Jack, how many hours would it take for me to fly your airplane? He said, what are you saying? I said, I'll teach me how to fly your airplane, but I don't want to get in the airplane. He said, you're not going to get in my airplane without me showing you how to do it.
Right.
And so I said, you're telling me I can't fly an airplane without putting my hands on you and you being there with me. He said, absolutely right.
So, Mike, you're saying there's no cliff notes for piloting? Is that
there
what you're
There is no cliff notes.
Okay.
Not in his airplane, anyway. He was an aerobatics pilot, too.
Okay. Yeah.
Anyway, so training leaders, I think it's our highest level of responsibility.
Amen.
And then finally is what I call tracking tools. We need dashboards. A church needs a dashboard. An association needs a dashboard. What are the things that we measure? Because whatever we measure determines what we're going to do.
That's right.
And the con is, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. If you can't measure your baptisms, which is a big deal for us, or your attendance, or your money, those are the big three that we do. But what about the spiritual development? What about the leadership development? How many more people are equipped now to do evangelism and pray and so forth than before? So
Yep.
There you go. Nine pros and cons.
I love it. So what, you're a year in or not quite a year in? What are you learning in the process?
I'm in the process. You can ask me a couple years from now and I could probably give you a better answer.
Okay, that's fine.
But really what I'm finding is I have to take a lot more time to spend personally with each regional team. Mm-hmm. I can't hand it off to them and just say, here you are, go do it. God bless you. Because there's some things that you have to show and tell. It's more caught than it is taught. So that's one of the things. And asking them what they're learning. What's been their experience, too? What changes do they see? And when it comes to some parts of it, like the city transformation piece, reaching your community, how do you reach your mayors and how do you reach your city police chief? And so, and I know a lot of these people, so I need to do the handoff for them for that. But we're still in the process, Rick. I mean, I can't tell you we've arrived because we have not. I'm going to tell you right now, it starts off slow and it's kind of like growing a vineyard, you know, you don't produce grapes for about 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, that's right. And I love what you articulated is that there's a spirit of communication, there's a spirit of feedback, and there's a spirit of measure. And those are all very important factors as you're getting something up off the ground.
Feedback's a breakfast of champions.
Yeah, I like that. Okay, guys, there's your tweet for the day. Hey, so all of this work is made possible by... I mean, at some level, because you have a large association. And so I've tried to say several times in the podcast that there are applications here for the smaller association. What would you say those distill down to? If a smaller association really wanted to look at their geography in the micro, if you will, and maybe even form groups within that, what would be one or two practical steps they might be able to take?
Good question. Well, small associations doesn't mean small territory.
Right, that's true.
And if you have a small association with a few churches and a great deal of space, you probably need to think regionalization because you can't be there in those places too much, especially with gas prices right now.
Yeah.
That's one thing. The other thing is the leadership development piece of it. I think the idea of having people assigned certain roles within the association and then holding them lovingly and encouragingly accountable and supporting them. You do the heavy lifting to give them the best you got.
That's good.
Because servant leadership means, you know, it's more important. Let me say it this way. We don't use people to do work. We use work to develop people. Mm. And that's servant leadership philosophy 101. It's taught by Jesus, the master teacher.
I love that.
You use ministry to develop people, not people to do ministry.
Okay. So if one of our brothers is listening to the podcast today and they've contemplated regionalization, but they've thought, well, it's either too complex or now's not the right time or whatever. There might be a myriad of other thoughts they have in relationship to it, but maybe they want to unpack it a little bit or try to understand it a little better. Would you be available to them to maybe, could they reach out to you?
Sure. Yeah. We actually have a website, sandiegobaptist.com. And then we have another one for city transformation called allsandiego.org. And both of those have some insights that might be helpful to them.
Okay. Would you mind sharing your email address? Perhaps
sure.
They could reach out to you directly.
Yeah. It's mcarlisle@sdsba.net. And or you can call me, go to the website. My number's there, okay. My email's there, so forth.
Perfect. All right. Well, as you know, Mike, I always ask a final question on the podcast. So I know great leaders are always reading. We're voracious readers. So why don't you tell the audience today what you're currently reading and why?
Well, our big emphasis right now is trying to impact our regions. So we're having a what we call Love Your Neighbor Summit in October. And at that summit, we've invited three keynote speakers. One is Stephen Byers, who's the pastor in Lafayette, Indiana. He has done an incredible job at loving his community to Christ. And he's going to come. We have Amy Lively, who wrote a book called How to Love Your Neighbor Without Being Weird. And she's coming.
I probably need that one.
Emphasizing particularly the role of women in loving the neighbor.
Which
they're better at it typically than
you bet.
Many of us are. And the third is a guy from Colorado. His name is Dave Runyon. And Dave wrote a book called The Art of Neighboring. So we got those three guys coming. We're going to do breakouts and workshops. And we're going to use it as an on-ramp for our churches to really take serious how to work together to impact the region.
Man, I love the theme of all three of those books. You and I both know, in, no matter what you're doing, whether it's business or ministry, it all begins with relationship. And a void, and void of relationship, it goes nowhere.
Amen.
All right. Guys, again, my guest today, Mike Carlisle. Mike is the Director of Missions for the San Diego Southern Baptist Association. Mike, thanks again for sitting down with me today. I really appreciate your time.
Great to see you. Thanks.
God bless you.
You have been listening to the AMS Excellence Podcast. For more information, or to contact the North American Mission Board's Associational Relations Team, send an email to associations@namb.net.